T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
Parrish. Brad Carson is in studio producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions.
Our daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you're ready for a fun weekend of college basketball, because we've got a fun weekend of college basketball, especially for two major programs in the state of Tennessee. The Tigers are at number 23, Cincinnati, with an opportunity to get what would be the biggest win so far of Penny Hardaway's college coaching career. Meantime, the Vols are hosting Kentucky. It's a matchup of top 10 teams that could help determine, or will help determine, the SEC champion and perhaps number one seed in the NCAA tournament as well. So we're talking a lot of college basketball today. We're going to focus on Memphis-Cincinnati in the opening segment. Get to it in a second. First, let me set this afternoon schedule for you. 4:20. Dan Walken's going to join me. He's a national columnist, USA Today. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dan Walken. Talk to him about his homie Trey Young down there in Atlanta. Named the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month today. Has really been playing unbelievably well since basically he and I got into a Twitter war. So if I motivated him to do that, you're welcome, Hawks fans. We'll talk to Walken in about 20 minutes. Finish that segment. I'll do four notable stories, 4:44, at which point we're going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Daryl Henderson, the GOAT, ran a 4.3640 today at the NFL Combine. That's the fastest of any running back, one of the fastest ever. That's going to help him on draft day. Get into that around 4:44. The Alliance of American Football has offered Johnny Manziel an opportunity to try out for its league. Can you imagine going from being a Heisman Trophy winner to a first-round NFL draft pick to being given an opportunity and little more than an opportunity to try out for the league? Talk about Johnny Football a little later on this hour. James Wiseman had a massive game last night, East win over Whitehaven. I'll give the details just before 5 o'clock. And the Tigers aren't the only college basketball team in this city. Lemoyne Owen also has a team. The Magicians are in the semifinals of the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Tournament tonight. Payne College is the opponent. I'll tell you a little bit about that during four notable stories, 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with Tiger basketball. Big game tomorrow. Memphis at number 23, Cincinnati. Fifth Third Arena on the Cincinnati campus. Tip is set for 7 o'clock. You can watch it on ESPNU. Cincinnati, of course, 24-4 overall, 13-2. In the American Athletic Conference. They're chasing only Kelvin Sampson's Houston Cougars. 30th at KenPom, 22nd in the NCAA's net rankings. Memphis, 18-11 overall, 10-6 in the AAC, 70th at KenPom, 53rd in the net. And KenPom has a projected score for this game of Cincinnati 77, Memphis 67. It only gives the Tigers a 20% chance to win on the road. So, before we get into it and the possibilities, but what we could maybe start talking about next week, if Memphis does upset Cincinnati, let's keep in mind that it would be a significant upset. I don't think it would be the biggest upset of the weekend, because crazy things happen basically every weekend, but when you are projected to lose by 10, you don't usually win. When you are given only a 20% chance by KenPom to win the game, you don't usually win the game. Wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world, but it is an unlikely scenario. we've talked a lot about the chances of the Grizzlies maybe getting the number one pick in the draft. This isn't quite that unlikely, but it's in the neighborhood at least. Either way, it's a 40-minute basketball game, like I always say, with a three-point line and possible foul trouble, possible injuries. You really do never know. So we'll see. But either way, the thing I'd been talking about most of this week and really dating back to the preseason was that all I wanted from Penny Hardaway's first season, beyond a top 15 recruiting class headlined by James Wiseman to be secured, is to just keep the season interesting as long as you can. You know, you inherited a program that was ranked 161st at KenPom last season, that was ranked 107th in this preseason, that wasn't supposed to, based on those numbers, go to the NCAA tournament or compete for an AAC title or maybe even go to the NIT. And yet the NIT is very possible right now, and the NCAA tournament is still possible for two different reasons. I wanted out of this season what I really want. I talked to Jason and John about this earlier. Out of every Met season, I don't think I've ever started a baseball season by saying, I hope the Mets win the World Series this year.
Right.
Or if they don't, yeah, I'll be disappointed. Because, like,
yeah, that's a top bar there.
That's not the type of thing that the Mets do.
No. Give me hope. Keep me interested.
Keep me interested as deep into the summer as you can. Like, just keep me interested. Give me a reason to get off work and come home and watch your games at night while I'm playing with my children and hanging out with my family. My goals are simple. Just keep me interested. Hey, the Mets are three games back with 1 month left to play. Okay, cool. That's great. I'm interested. Probably not going to get there, but it's still technically possible. Even somewhat realistic, that's all I want from you. Now, last season was a disaster. The only thing that could keep you interested in the Mets was Jacob DeGrom, because the team went sideways real quickly, injuries and everything else. But that's all I ever want from my favorite baseball team. It's all I wanted from this Memphis team. Keep me interested in the season as long as you can. And by interested, I mean where you are at least somewhat realistically chasing a at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. I think I even said exactly, if we can be on March 1st talking about at-large possibilities, that will be a massive success in year one under Penny Hardaway. And here we are. It is March 1st, and we can talk about at-large possibilities. They are still unlikely, and I think impossible, unless Memphis wins at Cincinnati. So the first step to all this is going to be winning that game tomorrow night. And I promise you, I can't speak for everybody else on the station, but I promise you, if Memphis doesn't win that game tomorrow night, I'll shut up about the at-large possibilities, and we'll start focusing on where they can finish in the AAC, what kind of seed they'll get, and if they can actually go win three or four games in the AAC tournament to get the automatic bid. Because if they do not win tomorrow night, the at-large stuff is basically over. We should all probably agree to stop talking about it. But as long as you can dream about it, somewhat realistically, what's wrong with doing it in advance of a game like this? So let's do it in advance of a game like this. I actually emailed my colleague and friend, Jerry Palm, who handles the projected bracket for CBS Sports earlier today, because I've been asked this question consistently since Memphis won at Wichita State. Whether it was a question from Jeff or a question from a fan or a friend, like, you know, is there any way that Memphis can get an at-large bid? And then it ratcheted up after the win over Temple. And I know most of the stories connected to Memphis basketball have been specifically about Jeremiah Martin and this run that he's on, but in a broader sense, okay, that's three wins in a row. That's five wins in the past six, with the lone loss being a single-digit loss at Central Florida. Central Florida projected to make the NCAA tournament. Undeniably, the Tigers are playing well, but are they playing well enough where they can possibly run the table up into the AAC championship game? And if they were to do that, would that be enough to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament? And my answer has consistently been, I don't think so. I don't think that they, on Selection Sunday, would get an at-large bid of the tournament if they, after beating Tulane, Wichita State, Temple, won at Cincinnati, beat Tulsa, and then won, if they had to play in the first round of the AAC tournament, win that, and then win a quarterfinal, and then win a semifinal and then lose in the championship game. I still, although that would be a hell of a run and crazy impressive way to close the season heading into Selection Sunday, I still don't think that would be enough. That's been my stock answer. But I don't do the numbers the way I used to do the numbers every day when I did the bracket for CBS Sports, because it's unnecessary for me now. You know, we've got one of the best guys doing it for us in Jerry Palm. His information is available to me, and I got a million other things to do every day of the week. I don't have time to sit around and put together pen to paper bracket stuff. So I said, you know what, I should just shoot Jerry a note to ask him. He'll know, because he has a grasp for this stuff. And so I sent him a note earlier today. And I said, is there any path to an at-large bid for Memphis? And I'll read you exactly like what I wrote. I wrote, if the Tigers win their final two regular season games at Cincinnati, at home against Tulsa, then beat, let's just say, Tulane in the opening round of the AAC tournament, Temple in the quarterfinals of the AAC tournament, Houston in the semifinals of the AAC tournament, because if they are a five seed, which is where they project right now, they would be playing Houston, as long as Houston closes this thing out, they'd be playing Houston in the semifinals if they were to get to the semifinals. So then you knock out Houston in the semifinals, and then let's say you're playing Cincinnati in the championship game, and it's a competitive game, but Jaron Cumberland takes over down the stretch, just like he did last time. Memphis and Cincinnati played inside FedEx Forum, and Cincinnati beats them. Let's just go same score, 69-64 once again. Does that put them in the conversation? And Jerry's reply was, yes, that would get them in the conversation. Now, he says the reason he doesn't have them on his quote-unquote bubble watch, if you go look at that at CBSSports.com, is because what I just described, what would have to happen for them to get into that conversation, does not line up with the way they've performed this season. In other words, Jerry's point is, I don't have them in the bubble talk because that's excessive. What would have to happen to even get them in that conversation? He didn't use this word, but not unrealistic, but way unlikely. Just starting with tomorrow night, you're probably not going to beat Cincinnati. So he says, I don't assume they'll be in that position, so it's a non-starter. But, yeah, if they did all of those things, they would be in the conversation. Because if they did all those things, they would be, well, they're on a three-game winning streak right now. They'd have to win two more to end the regular season, Cincinnati-Tulsa. So they take a five-game winning streak into the AAC tournament. And let's just say that they're the five seed as opposed to the four. But either way, the point's the same. They'd have to win either two or three more games in the AAC tournament, depending on the seed, to get to the championship game. So we'd be talking about a seven-game or an eight-game winning streak heading into the AAC tournament championship game. To Jerry's point, Memphis hasn't won more than four in a row all season. So is it really likely that they're going to go out and win seven or eight in a row to close the regular season and into the NCAA tournament? It's unlikely. But, you know, with the way they're playing, because they are playing better, and evidence isn't just what they've been doing at home. Evidence really is the one loss in this stretch at UCF. You know, they competed in that game. They had a chance to win that game. They were ahead in the second half of that game. And then they didn't let it, like, just completely, you know, they didn't go down 15. You know, all the stuff we'd seen on the road earlier in the season, like big problems at Temple and Tulsa and South Florida, those problems didn't exist when they were playing a better team in Orlando down on February 16th. So it's not just that, you know, they won at Wichita State or, you know, beat Temple. Even the loss to Central Florida suggests that they're getting better. And so it's not the craziest thing in the world to imagine it, even if it is an unlikely scenario. And that makes tomorrow night incredibly interesting to me. Now, we might look up at some point and, you know, Cincinnati opens the game 13-2 or, you know, 8-0 run in the second half to go up 15. Like, it could go that way. Again, the Bearcats will be favored by about 10 points in this game. But if you can't, you know, daydream a little bit in advance of tip-off and project a little bit in advance of what will likely be a loss but isn't a guaranteed loss, then what's the point? And so I don't want to say this is the biggest game Memphis has played in however many years, but on some level it kind of is. Because this time last year, Memphis wasn't – if I'd emailed Jerry Palm on March 1st, 2018 and said, hey, if Memphis does A, B, and C, could that get them in the conversation?
He'd get out of here.
He'd be like, dude, don't make me put your email address on a thing where it sends it straight to delete, right?
Yeah.
Don't ask stupid questions.
Right.
If I would have asked him on March 1st, 2017, hey, if Memphis does this, this, and this, can they get in the conversation for an at-large bid? He'd be like, no, what are you talking about? It's been a while since you could, if you are a Memphis fan, ask somebody who projects brackets for a living on March 1st, if Memphis does this, this, and this the rest of the way, can Memphis be in the at-large conversation? And they would reply with yes. That would get them in the conversation. So on some level, this is a big, big game. The most important March game they've played in a long time. Unless you want to count like semifinals of the AAC tournament last year where they're one win away from the championship game. But like whatever, that was trash. We're in March and they're playing a meaningful game against a ranked team. And if they win it, they'll be favored to beat Tulsa in the regular season finale. And that'd be a five-game winning streak, 7 of 8, heading into an AAC tournament that's going to be played inside FedEx Forum, where whatever happens tomorrow, Memphis will not be a significant underdog to anybody they happen to play in the American Athletic Conference tournament. So it's all good stuff. And by the way, we've been focusing over the past couple of weeks about how, you know, when we even started looking at this stuff, because it started looking like it might matter, or could possibly matter. You know, Memphis had 0 quadrant one wins, right? That's the thing, the 0-8 in quadrant one opportunities. Well, Central Florida moved into the top 30 of the net this morning. So Memphis does have 1 quadrant one win now. And I don't know if Central Florida is going to stay there. The schedule they've got coming up might not allow them to. But if they were, again, Memphis, to win these next two games and then get to the title game of the American Athletic Conference tournament, it would mean they'd either be 22-12 or 23-12 on Selection Sunday, you know, depending on the seed, because the seed will dictate how many games you have to play to get to the championship game. And they'd possibly have 3 quadrant one wins by then, which, again, might not be enough. If you ask me to bet on it, I'd tell you probably not, because I do think the bubble's probably going to shrink. All it's going to take is Nevada not winning the Mountain West Conference, or maybe VCU not winning the A-10, or Wofford not winning the Southern Conference. So even the projected cut line right now, it'll be at a different place on Selection Sunday because there will be a bid stealer or 2 or 3 somewhere. So I were guessing, even if they do everything I've described, I'd still think it's probably going to be a little short. Like, honestly, my best advice would be if you actually get to the championship game of the AAC tournament, just go ahead and win the thing and cut nets and make it simple. But either way, it's fun to talk about. I didn't know back when Memphis was, you know, losing 3 straight games to Tulsa, South Florida, and Cincinnati, going 1-4 in a 5-game stretch in January and early February. I didn't know that on March 1st we'd be able to have these conversations. The fact that we are, that means things are going well. Dan Wilkins up next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey. podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
423, Gary Perry Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN. Daryl Henderson, the GOAT, ran a 4.36 40 today. Fastest of any running back at the Combine. We'll get into it in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, he's a national columnist, USA Today. Dan Walken making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Perry Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So Dan Walken, earlier this week you noted on Twitter that ever since I got into a Twitter misunderstanding with Trae Young, he has been playing lights out. 36 points on Wednesday night. That came two nights after he got 36 against Houston. Today he was named the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. How excited are people in Atlanta about this Trae Young thing that's happening right now?
Yeah, it's starting to take hold, actually. I think people are excited. I'm actually going downtown tonight to go watch those guys play against Chicago, which should be a fun evening in downtown Atlanta. But, yeah, no, look, I mean, I think at the beginning of the season, and I think Trey's been pretty good most of the year, but he did go through a stretch early in the year where he was pretty inefficient in terms of his shooting and scoring. The passing's been there from day one. I mean, he is a genius passer, and that's been evident from the beginning, but he wasn't very efficient in the scoring. And then you're watching Luka Doncic do what he's done in Dallas, and even though it's not fair, because Trae Young never asked to be traded for Luka Doncic, he never asked to be compared to Luka Doncic, yet because of what happened on draft night, they are going to be linked forever in their careers. And so people are watching what Luka's doing in Dallas and saying, you know, oh my God, did, you know, the franchise make this awful mistake. But I think now people see the core and they see what the possibilities are and they see that, yes, Luka is excellent, but Trey's a pretty special talent as well. And now over, it's not just this week. I mean, it's been, you know, 6 or 7 weeks. He's been playing really good and they're actually like almost a 500 team over the last 33, 34 games. So I think people are pretty excited.
So there was a point, I imagine, most Hawks fans, and maybe even the Atlanta front office, with the way Luka was playing earlier this season, they would have said, yeah, if we could undo it, we would undo it. Would they undo it now?
Yeah, I don't think Travis Schlenk, the GM of the Hawks, would have ever said or even thought that they wanted to undo it, because their strategy from the beginning, their goal from the beginning, was to get as many, you know, bites at the apple as possible in the lottery. And by getting that lottery pick from Dallas, what looks like it's going to be a lottery pick this year, they felt like it was just an opportunity to get more talent into the franchise. And I, if you watched Trey night after night, I mean, no, he was not doing what Luka was doing. But he was good, and he was making guys better. And I think that's where you look at him. We talked about this before. When people were freaking out about him in summer league and he wasn't playing very well, he led the nation in points and assists as a freshman last year in the NCAA. Like, that just doesn't happen unless you're a special, special talent. And people might have had questions about the size, but you know he's a good shooter. He's always been a good shooter. And the passing just immediately translated in the NBA to a level that he was not going to be a bust. He was not going to be bad. I'm sure some people, some fans would have wanted to undo the trade, but I really don't think the front office ever sort of looked at it and said, man, we really made a mistake here.
To your point, I had an NBA person before the draft, and this is why, or it's among the reasons why, I got on board with, I wanted the Grizzlies to take him fourth over Jaren Jackson Jr. The NBA person, like, put it, he kept it as simple as he could keep it. He said, Trae Young is the best shooter in this draft, and he's the best passer in this draft. Don't overthink it. Just like he can shoot and pass. He'll be fine. And I know people had questions in summer league, but it looks now like he was the best shooter in the draft and the best passer in the draft, and he's going to be more than fine.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it also in the context of what they're trying to build with this team. And Travis Schlenk has got a type of player. And I know that this is going to sound like overly simplistic, but this is a guy who made his name as a talent evaluator in Golden State. you know, was instrumental in picking Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And he is a GM who values players who can shoot, pass, and dribble. And I know that sounds really simplistic, but you go through the draft every year, and players who cannot do one or two of those things get picked in the lottery every single year. So, you know, they're building a type of team around Trae Young that I think is interesting and is fun. And, you know, I think it's going quicker than they had anticipated in terms of the rebuild of this roster. When you've got John Collins, Kevin Huerter showing promising signs, they're going to have two new picks this year. So, yeah, like the vibe around the team, in, just in terms of the rebuild, people have sort of moved on from Luka and, you know, the what if, and now I think they're just kind of excited about what this thing looks like it might turn into.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm on, you can go back to my Twitter feed, night of the draft, the Grizzlies are on the clock picking fourth, Luka's off the board, DeAndre Ayton's off the board, Marvin Bagley's off the board. I tweeted I wanted the Grizzlies to take Trae Young, and I'd still hear about that, not so much lately, but from Grizzlies fans early in this season, like, you didn't even want Jaren Jackson, you wanted Trae Young. Is it possible? Is it possible I was right?
Well, yeah, I mean, sure, it's possible. I think every team that picked in the top five is happy with the guy that, right, that they have, and I think they would all tell you that. Now, if you reordered the draft, if you did it again based on 60 games, I think the top five would be ordered differently, and, you know, I don't know where Jaren Jackson would fall in that top five. Everybody who's watched the NBA this year has had a positive impression of Jaren Jackson.
Right.
There's no question about it.
Right.
And he looks like he could be one of the best defensive players in the league. Now, I think just my opinion from watching him in limited sample sizes this year is, you know, I think the offensive potential, the offensive ceiling is maybe a little lower than some people think. And, you know, I do sort of wonder why he doesn't rebound the ball better than the numbers or then his attributes would indicate that he should be able to rebound the ball. But there's no question, like, he's an instant impact defensive guy. He looks like a good pick. He's going to hit. But I do think, like Trae Young is potentially a top five offensive player in the NBA if you, like, project it out, you know, 5 or 6 years. So guys like that, the way the game is being played now, like, he's a pretty valuable piece. If his development continues on this trajectory, like, he is, in my opinion, probably, you know, right now, number two of the five in terms of what they've done. And he could end up being number one. I mean, you don't know. Like, is Luka already at his ceiling? Or is he going to get better? So that's the thing that's fun, is all these guys are going to develop and get better. And in 3 years, we may have a different conversation.
Talking to Dan Wolkin here, USA Today. He's on Twitter at Dan Wolkin. And, yeah, just to, for any Grizzlies fans listening, I want to be clear. I don't know if I was right about that. I just know that it's a more interesting conversation to have today than it looked like it might have been, say, 2 months ago. Let me ask you about this. Spurs today agree to a buyout with Pau Gasol. Woj reported that he's going to sign with the Milwaukee Bucks and be playoff eligible. Does that move the needle at all in the Eastern Conference?
It's hard to say because Pau wasn't really playing for the Spurs. Obviously, Pau is not what he once was. You know, how much does he have left in the tank? They obviously did him a favor by letting him go sign with a contender. And I certainly think if you're looking at the roster in Milwaukee and, you know, the theory of the case for how they make the NBA Finals, as many, like, just people who can stretch the floor, score from the perimeter around Giannis is kind of the way they feel like they can get there. So I guess in that sense, like, Powell can probably still shoot the ball from the perimeter. And kind of do as a backup what you know, what Brook Lopez has done for them this year, who's been fantastic. So yeah, I mean, maybe he helps them a little bit, but I mean, the way they played this year, I don't know how much more help they need.
Let's switch gears to college basketball. Massive game tomorrow in Knoxville. Top 10 matchup: Kentucky at Tennessee. There was a time not too long ago when Tennessee was ranked number one in the country. Whether they were the best team in the country or not, debatable, but they were ranked number one in the country. They went to Rupp Arena, got run completely off the court. P.J. Washington was awesome. Now they're back home, and even though they're coming off a win at Ole Miss, the Tennessee team hasn't looked right lately. They lost last weekend to an LSU team that was missing Tremont Waters, really needed Grant Williams to make tough shot after tough shot in the final minute to get the win at Ole Miss. What do you expect tomorrow at Thompson Bowl?
Yeah, you know, I would have said Kentucky. I would have picked Kentucky, but they didn't look great this week either. They barely beat Arkansas and, frankly, got the benefit of a couple calls at the end of the game that prevented Arkansas from having a chance to send that game into overtime or maybe win it late. Maybe they just weren't, you know, fully engaged because Arkansas is not very good, maybe looking ahead a little bit to the weekend. But it was not a very impressive performance, and they're going to have to play much better. Obviously, Thompson Bowling's tough, and they're going to have 20,000 people who are going crazy. I don't know how much the game really means in the big picture. I am sort of interested, just when you look at national championship-type teams, typically you want them to sort of be, you know, top 10 offensive and defensive efficiency teams. Tennessee, all season long, has been, you know, right there at the top, number one, number two, in terms of offensive efficiency, but their defensive efficiency is somewhere around, what, 37, 38 in KenPom? My question is, and you would know this better than me, like, are they good enough defensively to win six games in the NCAA tournament? And that's where I sort of am interested tomorrow to see, like, just are they able to defend Kentucky well enough to show me that they're a team that is a reasonable contender to actually win the whole thing.
I've looked up the data on this. The six of the past seven national champions have been top 11 in offensive and defensive efficiency. Most of those champions are better offensively than they are defensively, but they're top 11 in offensive efficiency and defensive efficiency. You have to check both of those boxes. And if we're just basing it on history, way more often than not, if you are that far down in your defensive efficiency numbers, you're not going to win the national championship. The only exception in the past 7 years is that very mediocre Connecticut team.
UConn.
Yep. Yeah, that just got hot and somehow ended up cutting nets with Kevin Ollie. But, you know, if you're trying to eliminate Tennessee from the national championship conversation, that's where you start. And if you're curious, anybody out there, about teams that check these boxes right now, top 11 in both, it's Virginia, it's Duke, it's Michigan State, North Carolina's right there, Kentucky is right there, and
Gonzaga
is 24th in adjusted defensive efficiency. But here's the other thing that should be pointed out. When I say six of the past seven national champions top 11 in both, that's after they win six games in the tournament, which means their efficiency numbers, anybody that wins, the efficiency numbers are going to improve if you win six games in the tournament. So that's to be taken into account. But Gonzaga is not too far away. They are number one in offensive efficiency and number 24 in defensive efficiency. You bring up Gonzaga. Let me ask you. Every day I tweet the top 25 and one, and I've got Gonzaga number one, and I had them there a week before the AP poll. There are people out there who consistently want to tell me why Gonzaga is not for real. Are you skeptical of them at all, or do you trust all the computer numbers that love them?
Yeah, I mean, after what happened a couple of years ago when they made the NCAA championship game, I think it's kind of silly to be skeptical. I mean, you just kind of have to get past that mentally. I would also say, just kind of given the way the tournament bracket has been set up recently, they may have the easiest path to the Final Four because, I mean, they're going to be the number one seed in the West, almost certainly. So, you know, when you look at kind of how the committee tries to place teams and put together the bracket, like, I think Gonzaga is going to have the path of least resistance.
Well, and the other thing, this is the point I've made over and over again, is that you cannot deny the team from two seasons ago was awesome. They played for the national championship. You know, 3 minutes to go, they're basically in a coin flip situation. If the officials recognize Kennedy Meeks as lying out of bounds, maybe, like laying out of bounds, maybe that flips the whole game, right? People don't remember because North Carolina just sort of ran off them in those final minutes, but that was about 3 minutes to go. I mean, it's anybody's game. If you paused it with about 3 or 4 minutes to go and played it 10 times from that moment, you know, maybe Carolina wins six and Gonzaga wins four, but Gonzaga wins some of them. If you'll acknowledge that team was awesome, then acknowledge this as well. This Gonzaga team has an adjusted efficiency margin that's 2 full points better than that team, and also better than the adjusted efficiency margin that Villanova created last season when it won the national championship. I mean, to me, the conversation stops and starts right there. These numbers are rooted in real stuff, and all of the numbers, you know, not to mention they've got a lottery pick in Rui Hachimura. Brandon Clark's got the second-best player efficiency rating in the country behind only Zion Williamson. They've got five guys in the rotation shooting above 38% from three-point range. That's why they've got the top-rated of offense in the country. They've, they got the all-time assist leader at their school. Same school John Stockton played at. He's running the point for them. I mean, all the everything there screams legitimate national championship contender, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the only thing that you could look at Gonzaga and question and or say this is why they won't win the national championship is the conference they play in. And yet, it's the same thing that Memphis had to deal with, you know, under John Calipari, and it's frankly should have been put to bed 2 years ago. The conference that they play in does not really have anything to do with the quality of their team and their players. And when you put it all on paper, when you look at the analytics, it all points to them being one of the, you know, four, five, six best teams and teams that legitimately can win it all. And like you said, the group that's in the top 11 of both, you know, North Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Kentucky, Michigan State, and I would throw Gonzaga. Like, if you gave me those six teams to win the national championship in the field, I would take those six teams.
I would, too. Wrapping up here with Dan Walken from USA Today. Last thing before I let you go, I saw you tweeting today. The NCAA Rules Committee was publicly acknowledging possible rules changes, and you had issue with at least a couple of them. What's the dumbest thing they proposed today?
So what they're proposing with the overtime rule, because the game against the A&M-LSU game last year, I think it went seven overtimes, and there was a lot of kind of angst about just all the extra plays and the time and how tired the teams were and all that stuff and the injury risk, and I get all that. But if that's the concern, that you're gonna that a seven-overtime game is bad, which I don't disagree with, but it happens maybe once a decade. I mean, that's literally, it's happened twice in the history of college football. So I'm just sort of against, in principle, making rules for things that happen once a decade. Second of all, what they have proposed is after the fifth overtime, or maybe in the fifth overtime, instead of just kind of going back to the normal rules, that they're just going to do two-point plays, alternating two-point plays. So if somebody stops a two-point play, that they're going to win the game, which I just think is ridiculous. I mean, if that's what you want to do, then just make the rule after the fifth overtime and nobody's won, then just call it a tie. Like, just go back to having a tie rather than an extremely stupid way to determine a game, which is who can either make or stop a two-point play without even having to do anything else. Like, I just fundamentally disagree with that. I think it's stupid. There's no harm anymore in a tie. So I would just kind of frame it that way. They've also proposed something about two targeting fouls per season would get you suspended, not just thrown out of the game you're in, but suspended from the next game. Like, I'm not necessarily against that. I just don't really know what that does. Because a lot of times these targeting fouls are just happenstance anyway. Intent needs to play a part in that if you're going to do it. I bet that does not pass. But the thing about the overtime, I just am against sort of making rules for things that like never happen.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. That's Dan Walken, USA Today. You can read him, usatoday.com. Follow him on Twitter, @DanWalken. Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. See you.
All right. Dan Walken, USA Today. When we come back, Daryl Henderson, the GOAT, ran a 4.36 40 today at the NFL Combine. In case you didn't know, that's very, very good. We'll get into that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Darrell Henderson ran a 4.36 40-yard dash earlier today at the NFL Combine.
Man.
And that's going to make him money on draft day, I would imagine. It was the fastest time for a running back at the Combine today, and the sixth fastest, I believe it's top eight, actually,
okay,
all time for running backs.
Man.
And so I'll just read you straight from Evan Barnstar at commercialappeal.com. We'll get all the information
sure,
from that. Henderson's second attempt in the 40-yard dash was listed at 4.36 seconds unofficially by the NFL Network. Officially, Henderson's fastest of the two times was listed at 4.49, which was tied for sixth fastest among running backs at the Combine. It was a mild disappointment given that Henderson's speed is his strongest asset, but it also validated that the former Memphis All-American compared favorably to other backs around the country. So the 4.36 was unofficial, but still, 4.36, it got tweeted a whole bunch and was impressive. Either way, we'll see what happens for him on draft day or night. But like I said, really, since he was just running away from people inside the Liberty Bowl over and over and over again, you're going to be watching football some Sunday, I would imagine, as soon as next season. And you'll see Darrell Henderson, whether he's a starting running back or not for somebody, he'll be getting carries. And I would think maybe not running away from people same way he did in the American Athletic Conference, but running away from people and through people similarly.
Story number two.
So the Alliance of American Football, their new leader,
yes,
who committed to an investment of $250 million, has said that they are open to the idea of Johnny Manziel, and if he wanted to try out, quote, try out for their league, they would do it.
That's kind of sad. Yeah. Come and work out for us. We'll see how you are, kid.
Now, the way it works is that in the Alliance of American Football, you have like a region. So if Manziel were going to play in the league, if the San Antonio franchise wanted him, that's where he would go. So I know, and we talked about this a little yesterday, people in Memphis were like, could Johnny Manziel be the quarterback for the Express?
Yeah.
Seems unlikely. But it also maybe seems unlikely that he can just be in the AAF at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why they want him to try out, quote, try out before they even go down that.
Right.
And I think try out means probably, hey, also, can you take this drug test?
Because yeah, he's had some substance abuse issues for sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he had reportedly cleaned himself up.
Mm-hmm.
But as is the case with people who struggle with substance abuse, just because you get sober one time doesn't mean that you'll stay sober forever. Mm-hmm. And it has still not been reported what he actually did to get banned from the Canadian Football League. But he is banned from the Canadian Football League. And if you start trying to just brainstorm about what could you possibly do to get banned from the Canadian Football League, if it's not a criminal thing,
right,
because like there's no arrest or police report, what could you possibly do to get banned from the Canadian Football League? Well, the list is pretty short, isn't it?
I think so.
Like, if you have a person who has so publicly struggled with substance.
Mm-hmm, with addiction. Mm-hmm.
And now he's banned from a football league. Cut, just boom, you're gone and banned.
Yeah.
Be one thing if the franchise just said, well, yeah, we don't want him anymore.
Yeah.
Showing up late for me, whatever. But banned from the league is basically, I would assume, he slipped up again.
Right.
And I don't care how talented you are or how accomplished you are or how famous you are. If you cannot avoid a failed drug test or, you know, overcome your addiction, there's just not a place for you in professional sports. I mean, we saw it with Josh Gordon this past season with the Patriots. Like, he is undeniably gifted, but he struggles with some of the same things so many other Americans struggle with, so many other humans struggle with, and you know he can't pass the drug test consistently. He can pass one, maybe seven, but history shows that every time they get him at some point, and we seem to have reached that point with Johnny Manziel as well. And it's a sad story because there was a time where he was arguably the most famous football player in this country, certainly on the list, and I mean at all levels.
Johnny Football.
He was a phenomenon in college.
Yeah.
Heisman Trophy winner. And then somebody you wanted to root for, at least I wanted to root for in the NFL because I just liked the idea of Johnny Manziel being awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a long list of people who have had their professional sports careers and just careers in general because of addiction. And sadly, it looks like Johnny Manziel might be another one.
Story number three.
Big game for James Wiseman last night. East beat Whitehaven. He got 27 points, 20 rebounds, 10 blocks in a 60-44 win. So that's a triple-double, 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 blocks. Obviously, he's terrific.
Yeah.
That's why he's ranked number one in the country, according to some recruiting analysts. But 27 points, 20 rebounds, and 10 blocks against a quality basketball
team, right,
is just ridiculous. Yeah. And so it was a glimpse of what is on the way for the University of Memphis. Not that we needed another glimpse or reminder. I think everybody in this market is well-versed on on James Wiseman and his abilities. You know, I don't know if he'll have a freshman year that looks statistically like Marvin Bagley's freshman year at Duke or DeAndre Ayton's freshman year at Arizona, but he's going to be impactful, and he's among the reasons you can be excited that next season Memphis won't have to overachieve to be in the NCAA tournament at-large conversation. They'll just have to play to the level that their roster suggests they should be able to play. Because if they do that, they'll be, I would think, on Selection Sunday, safely in the field.
Story number four.
And shouts to Lemoyne Owen. They won their game in the quarterfinals of the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference Tournament. And so they are in the semifinals tonight against Payne College. And so that program, of course, led by William Anderson and my buddy Tony Sarwar. And so I got a text from Tony earlier today, like, you know, hey, look at us.
Yeah.
And so I did take a look. You know, we focus so much on high major basketball.
Sure.
But, you know, that Lemoyne Owen team is a team that we've seen play inside FedEx Forum that is led by people in Memphis that Memphians know. And so good luck to William, good luck to Tony, and go Magicians. They tipping off tonight a little after 7 o'clock. Be back with Jeff Calkins.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.